The 4th of July reminds us of our collective obsession with right-handed power. Right-handed power. We celebrate the freedom this country wrought, after all, from the British through battles, through might of the pen and the sword, through the Declaration of Independence, and our various battles, especially many of those in Virginia. Because right-handed power is the accumulation of a good through force. Accumulating something through force. That force could be strategic, or it could be brute. But it is the accumulation, and it has a central tenet in that it's never finished. Right-handed power can never be finished because it's all about accumulation. Somebody else can always accumulate more or attack what you have accumulated. So many times, right-handed power is only as good as the last score. And the inability to be finished is because of this reliance on accumulation. Meaning, in a practical sense, someone or something can always accumulate more than you. 12 years ago, I was on Cape Cod for the 4th of July. We were with my family in this little village called Woods Hole, a place we still go in the summers. And a few weeks prior to that, I happened to be in South Carolina. And I was down there for business, and I made a pilgrimage to one of those monster fireworks stores. And I even asked the guy at the front desk, I was like, I want to go in the back room. The guy's like, we don't have a back room. And I was like, every place has a back room, and I want to see the back room fireworks. And so he let me go in the back room, and I purchased just a Southern treasure trove of fireworks that I was going to take to Massachusetts. And I was going to not only impress our house guests, but I was going to put on this grand performance. And so I prepared my lineup. And I remember my mom kept telling me, you haven't been up here over the 4th in a while. You ought to wait for the neighbor's show. And I was like, Mom, you got nothing on what I've got. I even got back room fireworks. And so there went my little display. And towards the end, I went to my back room stuff. And there were a couple of those big mortars where you drop the balls in them, and they have like 10-foot fuses. And I did go 10 feet away. Some of you know what I'm talking about. And so I wedged them safely in the rocks and pointed them out to go right underneath the seawall and out into the ocean above so we could watch them from the deck. I lit two fuses, and with just huge anticipation, everybody was on the deck. There hadn't been that many fireworks. As the fuses start going down, I'm like, oh, this is going to be so good. And I'm up just high enough to watch the sort of the vibrations of both mortars. They're starting to go like this. Now, the water's right here, right? They're pointed perfectly over the water. They're just going like this, and they keep going as the fuse is getting closer and closer to the mortar. By the time the fuse got to the mortar cannons, they both turned directly into the water. And they went boom. And it was awful. And then to make matters worse, my mom was right. Our neighbor was a pyrotechnic expert. He had a license. This dude wheeled a wagon onto his beach and had a computer. And he started setting off fireworks that would make, that just made me go upstairs to my room. If I would have been 8, I would have gone up and cried. I mean, it was just so disheartening, right? But it's a perfect example, too, of how what we view as maybe our power and our authority could so quickly evaporate in the face of somebody else. Meaning the fragility in which we hold on to anything is never as strong as we think it is. It's never as strong as we think it is. And ultimately, with right-handed power, it becomes exhausting because we have to continue to know, well, what if the next guy has something bigger and better? I got to get something bigger and better. It's like a constant chess match. And if you've ever played chess, chess is a brilliant example of right-handed power, right? It's my son Fred and I play a fair amount. He wins a good amount too, and it's fun. But the whole game is about who can conquer more quicker, who can accumulate more pieces, and ultimately who can get the other person's king, right? It's all about right-handed power. There's no sacrifice unless you're doing it strategically to accumulate more. And right-handed power, just to drill this home, is the way the world functions, right, many times. It's the world's sort of mill is in the free and closed markets of the world, in our sports games, in most of our human interactions that have some sort of right-handed power twinge to them. Right-handed power is very much the grist for the world's mill. And many wonderful things, just so I don't go totally negative on right-handed power, many wonderful things have come of right-handed power. The pursuit of science resulting in our COVID vaccines is an example. Military excellence, defeating evil forces, and so on. However, with right-handed power, there's always this catch, right? There's always something else. There's always another disease. There's always somebody more eviler. There's always somebody that can outplay you on the chessboard, in other words, or outsmart you. You can always try to do more or run faster. Somebody can always make more and accumulate more. And the gospel is full of lessons about the human proclivity for right-handed power. The Holy Scripture is chock full of them. And we get one today with our buddy Naaman. Naaman is, by any counts, hear this, a great man and in high favor with his master and a mighty warrior. He's in high favor with his master and a mighty warrior. AKA, this guy's like Stormin' Norman or somebody, right? He is a power general. He is the epitome of right-handed power. If he wants something, people do it for him. And he has an entourage, and he has the ability to command legions, but he also suffers from something, we learn. He suffers from, no matter how much domination you might have in the world, or how strong your grip might be, or your right-handed power, some things just can't be dominated. I was talking with someone the other day about the just incredibly awful disease of Alzheimer's and dementia. And their response to me was, you can't solve it. That's what's so frustrating. There's no chemo rounds. There's no surgeries. There's not even the glimpse of being able to solve something like that. It is crushing in that way. And the same for Naaman with this leprosy. So what does Naaman do? Well, Naaman does what anybody who has a lot of right-handed power does. He starts using it to cure his leprosy. He goes to the Lord of Aram and petitions to get him to petition the Israelites to have this healer that he's heard about from the servants, this prophet, to heal him of his leprosy. Now, just a quick little context there. The people, the Aramites and the Israelites are sort of enemies. They're not best friends. And so, in other words, Naaman is asking for a big favor to get the Aramite leader to call up the king of Israel and say, hey, I got this really strong Stormin' Norman general that needs to be cured. But he doesn't, because Naaman's pulling all of his levers. And don't we, when we want to be healed, we pull them all. So he pulls all his strings. And so he gets this invite to Elijah's house, to the prophet's house. And he rolls up in his party, right? Think like 10 black suburbans and all kinds of people in smoke glass windows. And they come out banging on Elijah's door saying, you know, the mighty Naaman is here. And what does Elijah do? Elijah sends out like one of his little minions and just says, hey, buddy, go take a bath in that river down the street. That's it. What? I could have bathed many times, Naaman tells us. He's like, I've got better water where I was than this Israelite dirty water. How do you want me to go dirty water? And yet, that's precisely what Naaman does. And he is healed. Not through force, but through giving up. Because the opposite of right-handed power is accepted and submitted, is sacrifice, it's humility. It's not getting, Naaman was mad, right? His chest puffed up. That prophet couldn't even come out and talk to the great Naaman. And this beautiful servant comes back and says, but I think they're healers. And Naaman tries it, and he's healed. Naaman's healed despite his ability to have all this power. He's healed because of Elijah's care and love. Now, our gospel reading gives us just another quick glimpse into what this left-handed power means. Did you notice in this nice long text today what Jesus sends his disciples out with? Nothing! What you all bring to church today? Your phones, glasses, band-aids, wallet, purse, maybe, you know, some Tylenol if your back was a little sore. You know, like, in other words, I bet each one of us brought different things today just to be here for an hour and a half. I'm not going to preach that long, don't worry, but just to be here for a little while. And Jesus is telling them to go out and spread the gospel without anything. That is the epitome of left-handed power. It's not power at all. It's paradoxical power. You leave the tools of accumulation behind, which tells us that what needs to be accomplished has already been accomplished. That you're free to operate without a quota system, without scorekeeping, without trying to conquer. You're free to operate in a relationship with love, with others. Because Elijah's healing is a complete forerunner to what Jesus did in this embodiment of left-handed power. Jesus completely embodies the left-handed power. Because it's power that doesn't look like power. Left-handed power is paradoxical power, in other words. It's the power that looks like weakness, that takes the form of a carpenter, of a social outcast, of a teenage mother who gives birth out of wedlock. But this power is good news for you and me, because unlike right-handed power, left-handed power is complete and finished. Because it's not a power that's based on accumulation or force, rather on humility, sacrifice, and love. You can't take it away, in other words. It's that great returning image in Harry Potter over and over again when Voldemort tries to get close to Harry, but he can't because Harry has been loved by his parents. And that's a power that's greater than any other power. Left-handed powers, then, its one tenet is that it is finished. It is complete power. I was listening, I know this is a surprise, but I was listening to the a Grateful Dead show on my way up here today. And I didn't realize this, but 57 years ago, this weekend, was the first time the Grateful Dead ever played. And obviously, besides Bobby Weir, they're in a whole new iteration, but they're still touring and playing. And when they started playing out on the West Coast, and this creating this sort of culture of the scenes, there was a word named called mirror. Some of you know where maybe this is going, that was changed from being a noun to a verb as it relates to the Grateful Dead. Because to be miracle meant that you arrived at a Grateful Dead show without a ticket. You arrived without anything, and someone just gave you a free pass into the show. It still happens today at every Grateful Dead show. People show up, and there's people who just say, "Do you have a ticket? I want a miracle." You wait outside the show, and you hold up one finger, it's usually the sign, and somebody would come out, slide a ticket under your arm or in your back pocket. No strings attached. This ticket costs you nothing. It costs the giver, of course, everything. And it allows you full entrance into the concert. That illustration is, of course, the same thing that Jesus does for us on the cross. When left-handed power breaks the cycle of right-handed power once and for all because of Jesus' sacrifice and death. And that's the good news for you and me, is that we've all been miracled by Jesus Christ when he died on the cross. Our ticket has been punched, and it reads, "It is finished. You are loved." Amen.